Woohoo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And I'm feeling all the love on this Tuesday.
You're feeling love, Megan?
I'm feeling a lot of love. You just made me a matcha tea.
I did.
And your matcha tea contains a lot of love and a lot of energy.
Yeah, matcha tea, we talked about it before on the podcast, is the ultimate source of long-time energy. And for some reason, we got away from it. And all of a sudden, we rediscovered it. We also rediscovered our frother. And our energy levels are sky high right now, flowing on that sweet matcha wave.
And it's so much fun. It is like a flow state. It's great. We actually have a heart rock in our kitchen from like 150 podcast episodes ago when we discovered the true love of matcha.
Yeah.
And it says matcha and bang on it. And I haven't had matcha, I think, since 150 episodes ago. Yeah. And I don't know why. It's so, good.
No matcha and bang right now, but matcha and podcast, fuck yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like, I mean, I don't know. This is the equivalent of some good stuff.
This is intellectual banging.
Yeah,
what you're
exactly.
Saying.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as good as like, actually, sometimes it's as good as the real stuff.
Yeah. I think it's just as good as the real stuff. This is so, that's how much we love this podcast. You're essentially doing audio porn right now for Megan and I. That's the vibes that we're bringing in. Actually, the matcha brings up this story I just read about this morning that I wanted to tell you about. So Micah Parsons is the linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys. He either won Defensive Player of the Year last year or is one of the best players in the NFL.
Oh, for sure. I would argue, I've watched him play. I would argue that he's like one of the scariest players in the NFL.
I mean, he's like 6'3", 250 and ran a 4'4", 40-yard dash. This guy is a total beast and he seems quite delightful.
I would not want to face him. We talked about last week the concept of like, would you take $1 million?
Yeah.
Or would you take $10 million to do four plays in the NFL? And if it was Micah Parsons, I would. That would for sure factor into the equation.
Yeah, he'd be dead.
Also, I love him that I was just thinking about that. You get $1 million at baseline.
Yeah.
Whoever created this like story is great. I like that. It's like you win either way.
That should be kind of every decision tree is doing nothing gets you $1 million.
Exactly.
That sounds amazing to me. But what he did is in the game yesterday, before the game, he went and took a C4 pre-workout supplement. I had no idea what this was, so I looked it up. It has 300 milligrams of caffeine.
Holy crap.
Including 100 milligrams of that is liposomal variety, as we've talked about with iron.
I didn't even know there was liposomal caffeine. Yeah. I mean, we talked about liposomal iron. It's like an effective way to deliver things.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that caffeine needs to be delivered any more effectively.
It also had like 15 other stimulants plus citrulline for nitric oxide. It had all this stuff. But the reason that it's a relevant news story is he vomited twice during the game. And the reason he said he did was not because of nerves or sickness, but it's because he took the C4 pre-workout powder plain. He just took the powder, put it in his mouth, and that was what he did before the game. Could you imagine Micah Parsons coming at you with 300 milligrams of powder straight in your face?
That is so much swag to just go like straight ingesting the powder without even putting any water in it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine doing that? I feel like I'm surprised you haven't done that yet with Athletic Greens.
Yeah. They'd be committed to the cause.
He would be really committed to the
cause.
Maybe
I should try it.
Yeah. But I'm not surprised at all. I mean, that's insane. Also, I wonder what it does in terms of like C4 advertising. Do you think it boosts the product or is it negative?
Oh, boosts it so much.
Yeah.
Any pre-workout that makes you vomit on the football field, that's something that weight lifters want at least.
Oh yeah. I mean, it makes you feel great. It also makes you feel great as it comes back up.
Actually, and that's a good lesson for everybody out there is be careful with pre-workouts in general, not necessarily they just make you vomit, but they have really weird things in them. And when you hear about contamination, supplemental, like doping violations, a lot of those come from pre-workout supplements. So make sure you do not take a pre-workout unless it is NSF safe for sport, because it can have weird shit in it.
And if you go through the WADA violations of products that have been on the list, everything has a bonkers name.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
They're the best.
It's like wild and horny, batshit crazy. Like I'm just making up names off the bat, but literally those could pass.
So WADA lists all of the supplements that are classified as high risk. So a lot of the ones that were contaminated, it's really interesting that we don't talk about this more, that most of the supplements have the wildest backstory. Wild and horny. You nailed the name. They're all called that. They're never just called like smooth energy or matcha. They're called like, you're going to kill a bitch.
Well, that's kind of how I feel right now. I feel like your matcha tea latte could be called wild and horny. You put, I mean, the way that you like mix products, I feel like it kind of hides the caffeine and then it comes out subtly over time. And you're like, what's in this?
There's definitely some Nesquik in
it. Some straight powder. But I feel like how we're feeling, it's just an extension of our run date this weekend.
We had a run date, Megan.
I know. We talked about matcha tea like 150 episodes ago. I think our last run date was at least 10 episodes ago.
It's been a while.
It's been so long. I feel like between like childcare and training and travel and work schedules and my heart recovery schedule just took a long time to align.
Yeah. Your heart recovery schedule may be the biggest limiter of all.
Actually, our last run together was the day before my heart exploded. So I think that was really the true limiter.
I'm glad because, you know, if the last run we did together was when your heart exploded, if it's two times in a row, then it starts to become a little bit of a trend. And I'm worried that I'm the one that's causing your heart to explode.
Yeah, high five. I'm good.
Yeah, you are good.
We did a solid run yesterday. I could tell.
You crushed it, Megan.
I was feeling good. And
you popped off the ground. It was amazing. I've almost never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I'm actually feeling, I feel actually pretty good on this return. But I could tell that as I was like kind of starting to progressively ramp up the effort a little bit.
Definitely.
And I was having so much fun out there. I was woohooing and huzzahing. And actually, we saw a ton of podcast listeners too. And they kind of like joined in the fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was like having an audience out there. But I could tell you're getting progressively worried. You're like, I better not be the cause of this heart issue.
And then eventually I just gave in. So running with you is one of the most joyous experiences because often, you know, I think about running in this intellectual sense and I talk about things like airplane arms and woohoo, but in my own personal experience, it's not always like that. And I really have to force it out to some extent. Even when we start our runs, you know, I'm sometimes tired on Sundays and all that. And it's tough to get into that mindset.
Oh yeah. Sunday is one of the hardest runs.
Yeah.
Actually on Saturday I did a bike and I was like, Megan, I need to be ready for date day. I took so many gels out there.
Yeah. And I got, you know, progressively more happy just running with you and seeing the vibes come out to the point at the end of this run, you were so high. Like I've almost never seen anybody that stoked on life. I was trying to think of what it's like. And I was like, she's like the Orgasmatron 3000 when she's running. It's just the happiest person I've ever seen. And for me, it's so inspiring because, you know, you've developed that through the process of having your heart broken by this sport. And you wrote in a beautiful Instagram post yesterday that like, you know, you've had this, your heart broken by this sport, both figuratively and literally.
So many times. Yeah. Yeah.
And clearly, you know, your orgasmatron, like laser blasters come from those heartbreaks.
Well, I mean, yeah, I appreciate it so much. And I think I've recognized through these heartbreaks that it's like, it's worth fighting for.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, because like there've been periods of time where we're training like every day for 2 weeks together. And even like having the break from training together, it was so special to have that date. Yeah. And it truly felt like some sort of like intimacy celebration out there. And I think some of that is like having the heartbreak of running, having this kind of period of time off. And like, how do you make magic in the mundane? I think you find little sprinkles of that, but that was like extra magic.
And I also think you were probably quite turned on by my new warm-up routine.
Oh my gosh.
Did that get you going?
Okay. So you got out of the car and actually did an impersonation. So for me, when I warm up, I'm like sitting in the car. And I think a manifestation of having so much energy to go run is I go from sitting in the car. And then as soon as you park, I like bolt out of the door and go do my warm up really fast.
I just press the ignition button. You just open the door and just run away as if like we're fleeing from a bank robbery or something. And that would not work for me.
Well, you tried to imitate it yesterday and you kind of strained your hamstring in the process.
I don't know how you do it. You're way more limber than I am. That's for sure. I need a much more thorough system.
Meanwhile, you take like 5 minutes to get out of the car. Yeah. You're like moving pretty slow, but then you strap on ankle weights.
I do. I use strap-ons is what you're saying.
And you jog around the park with these ankle weights. And it's quite, I mean, I don't think anyone quite warms up the way that you do.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about this. It's not bro science if it's not backed up by multiple bros. This is just one dude doing it, which is me. So it doesn't count as bro science. There's no science on using ankle weights as warmups. But what I found is it makes me feel so good when I take them off that I'm kind of addicted to it.
Okay, if it's not bro science, is it himbo science?
It is himbo. I'll take himbo science. Yeah. Himbo science is great. It's me and Travis Kelce. I bet Travis Kelce uses this ankle weights.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah. It's so great. And I've always said this, and we talked about this once on the podcast before, but if you just have trouble getting out the door, strap on some ankle weights as if you're walking around the house. It's just like the NFL or baseball players that are swinging two bats in the batting cage. And you just use one bat. Ooh, it feels good.
Oh, you've extended this warm-up routine to be like all of life existence. Yeah. I feel like you wear ankle weights everywhere.
I do.
We just need John G to make you pants that have built-in ankle weights at the bottom.
Okay. Well, I don't wear them everywhere. Let's not give listeners their own idea. But
I mean, you wear them like 25% of the day.
To be fair, if when podcast listeners come over to the house for any reason, they will sometimes see me with my legs up working with ankle weights on for no reason. Okay, we have the best episode for you today. Here's a quick roadmap. We're going to talk about running cadence, some signs there. Talk about winter clothing, the nuances of fueling runs and recovery. Lots of interesting follow-up on that subject. The Western States Lottery, NCAA cross country, a big breakdown of some Strava things that we wanted to talk about, sodium bicarbonate science. This is at the cutting edge of supplements. marine worm hemoglobin doping.
Which we got sent by so many listeners.
That's how you know it's SWAT podcast material, is when five strangers send us and say, you love this shit, which is pretty wild. Talking about bone density and how you can improve it. Very important topic that we ventured into on Patreon last week. And then finally, hot takes.
And I'm so excited to continue the fueling discussion. I feel like we've been kind of like inadvertently talking about fueling across several episodes. Yeah. We should just made it a series at this point. That's maybe it's just like our ongoing podcast series.
That's pretty much the SWAT podcast, you know?
That's true.
And yeah. I was thinking about this actually. So we're at 181 episodes today. And obviously we don't just break down training theory on every episode because it'd be quite boring to tell people like weekly structure, lactate threshold every single week.
Instead, we talk about worms.
We talk about worms. Exactly.
Actually, this worm might be even cooler than Jonas Vindigo. So stay around for the worm discussion.
Yeah. Come for the jokes about strap-ons. Stay for the worm doping. All right. So the reason I want to talk about running cadence as the subject here is that you did a work trip. Your heart didn't explode. It was awesome. And then when you came back, you were running. And as I said, you were looking so good. And I looked at your run cadence and it was high again. And it had really dropped. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty significant. And then I ran with you yesterday and it was just so clear. Something has fundamentally changed in your body in this process. I don't know exactly what it is. But that higher running cadence really brought up the subject of like, oh, well, we like to uplift higher running cadences in SWAP generally. Like it's better to be slightly higher, like lighter on your feet, quicker strides than to be, you know, more clomping. How do we do it? How do we improve this? How did you do it?
Well, I think mine was actually kind of it and burn. So in this heart recovery process, I actually went off a medication that I've been on now for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I think it was making me feel slightly sedated.
Interesting.
And I think, I mean, there's really nothing. I was not focusing on cadence at all. And literally my cadence went up like by 10. So like per minute, which is wild. And all I did was go off. It's Plaquenil, which is kind of like, people say often when they go on it, they feel sedated. And I think I certainly did, but I adapted to it over time.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh my gosh, neuromuscularly, I feel so good.
So for those listeners out there that might know Plaquenil, this is hydroxychloroquine.
Yes, yes.
Brings up some early 2020, you know, vibes about like what President Trump at the time was saying about COVID treatment. Megan was taking it for an autoimmune condition, but you're off it now. And so did you even know that your cadence went up that much when I pointed it out on your Strava?
Well, I mean, I feel like fundamentally different. Like I feel like there's like a better pop and turnover in cadence. So yes, I mean, I feel it, but I didn't think it went up like 10 beats.
Yeah.
How would you call it? Was it beats per minute? Like
strides per minute.
Yeah.
Well, the reason that you're saying beats per minute is because the study we're about to talk about.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
That's really interesting. And it gets back to, okay, for most of us, you can go off a medication perhaps that you need to go off like Megan did. You can take a lot of matcha. That's probably not sustainable. How else can you raise your running cadence to improve your running economy? Because a lot of studies do show that it reduces injury rate to raise your running cadence. And the running economy thing is mixed bag, but most of the elite runners you see have higher cadence. And that gets to this study that came out this year. It's in the European Journal of Sports Science called Using Beat Frequency and Music to Adjust Running Cadence in Recreational Runners, a Randomized Multiple Baseline Study. And the rationale here is that across a bunch of studies, music has been shown to increase cadence. But does this last, or is it only in the study intervention when athletes are actually listening to that faster paced music?
Well, I think it's aside from the music too. Like I think a bunch of the pushback surrounding like form changes in running or even like focusing on biomechanics is like, oh, well, it just erodes away over time. So why would you spend this like focused period of time working on it? Yeah. But I think it's really cool to do a cadence study and actually like follow athletes over a longer trajectory of time and be like, does this hold?
That's the wildest thing to me about running form and biomechanics talks in general is you often hear people say, don't change your running form. You'll just find what works for you. I'm like, bitch, what are you talking about? Yeah. That is obviously not true. Like everything is a learned practice. And if you're just left to your own devices, you're going to be bringing in so many like preconceived notions about what works. Like for me, I'm coming from like a football sprinting sports background. So I kind of run with just clumpy stride at baseline. I needed to work on this hard. A lot of other people don't need to work on it at all. It's just totally natural to them.
Well, I feel like a lot of practitioners like don't give runners the benefit of the doubt. It's almost like I feel like there's like this conventional wisdom that you should talk to people like they're in like fourth grade in terms of like translating literature and things like that. And it's like, no, talk to them like if they're at the college level and help them get there.
Yeah.
And I feel like same thing with like running form changes. It's like, no, like invest in people. Like they're I feel like runners and athletes are stronger than we think they are.
Especially with running form. Because the reason that people will say not to change form is because, of course, if you take someone and immediately change their form, you might see some running economy decrements because they're not used to it.
Yeah, they can be inefficient at first.
But what's so interesting about this study and some of the other ones on gait retraining is that they're finding that the changes actually do persist. And so here's the study design. They started with 7 athletes with a cadence under 170 strides per minute. They had 2 dropouts, so we're only talking about an N equals 5 here, which is pretty small. The intervention phase was 4 weeks with music that was 7.5 to 10% beats per minute above their baseline running cadence. So here, equalizing beats per minute of music and running cadence. And then the post-intervention was without music.
And what they found was pretty shocking, actually. So they found an 8.5% cadence increase during the intervention. Mm-hmm. But this is the Moneyball quote of the article, is that they actually found a 7.9% in cadence increase that remained post-intervention.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, oh my gosh, it maintains and it stays. And I feel like it's counter to a lot of like the thoughts of both cadence and form changes regressing
yeah.
over time.
Yeah, and here's another quote from the article. Importantly, the increased cadence occurred without simultaneous increases in running speed and heart rate. Hereby potentially reducing mechanical loading without increasing metabolic load. And that's the holy grail of high volume running training mm-hmm. is you can get, you know, less mechanical loading that causes injury while not increasing, you know, metabolic load. So this is a really cool type of intervention you can do. And it gets back to what we said all along. Music is your friend and you should try it out.
Oh my gosh. I love running to music. It's amazing. So good. I know. I mean, I do some runs without it, but it's like getting out the door with music is so helpful. And then there's times I like don't even hear there'll be an amazing song on Definitely. And I don't even hear it, but it's nice to kind of like tune into it every once in a while.
Yeah. And here's a quote from a professional athlete I coach. This is on day 2,468 of their log. I'm not sure how many years that is, but I think it's probably coming up on 7 years. They said, "Best I felt all week. Felt super strong. Also, my partner lent me his headphones so I could listen to music. Don't know what I've been doing for the past 14 years of not listening."
14 years?
I know. It's like this athlete's going to win every race next year.
Can you imagine how good that feels?
It must feel incredible.
It must be so good.
Yeah. It reminds me of, so last week you gave me the Hill Beast workout. And when I went out there, I specifically was like, I'm leaving my headphones at home because I want to suffer on this. Because the whole point of a Hill Beast, which is 10, 8, 6, 4, 2 minute hill intervals, part of it is to get in that mindset of like, okay, this is hard. And so I left the music at home specifically because it was really freaking hard. And you don't have to do that. You can make it easier on yourself day to day. And I think music is one way to do that. And it's really interesting to think about how faster paced music might improve cadence too.
Does it change? Like, so when you were doing that workout, do you feel like it like changed your mentality or your approach or where your brain was going not to have music?
No, because I think it's similar to this study. In that when you do an intervention and you get kind of accustomed to the intervention, you can remove the intervention and the habits that have formed mm-hmm. stick.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, yes, I would say most of my fitness has been built with music and built with awesome music. We have tons of SWAT playlists out there that you can find on Spotify. But when I take it off, all the fitness is there and all the habits I've built in that mindset are still there. So, I mean, that's why I think it's really helpful. It's the same way that like running with a group is great, but then running without a group, you'll still have the benefits mm-hmm. that you gained from training with partners.
And Spotify actually has dedicated playlists yeah. to certain like strides per minute. And I think it's super helpful to be able to have that like queued up. But for me, what I find fascinating is my cadence has increased over time.
Yeah.
But I actually just kind of listen to like sad boy music sometimes, which is probably at like 130 strides per minute. And I still roll with it.
Well, maybe there's a big opportunity.
I know, right?
If you do a pop punk playlist.
Oh, I like it.
Because what I found is pop punk is essentially driven by drum beats, right?
Yeah.
It's incredibly fast drum beats. So pop punk, Megan, this whole time, performance enhancing music. We were talking about C4, whatever pre-workout supplement. I want my Blink 182. That's the actual performance enhancer right there.
You're just going to take it straight.
Take it straight. No chaser. So think about increasing your cadence if you're low. Like if you're below 170, that's when to start thinking about it a little bit. If you're above 170, you probably don't need to. There's exceptions to this rule. People like Jim Walmsley have pretty low cadence. But the fascinating thing I always look back on is you almost never see an athlete over 40, but especially over 50 with low cadence. And I think that that is a causation factor, not a mm-hmm. correlation. Because if you have low cadence, you're going to have to change that really quick. Or as your muscles lose a little bit of their power, as you know, injury rates become a little bit higher, you're going to have, you know, some issues. Similarly, that's why you see it in male athletes, but very rarely in female athletes do you see this low cadence.
And I think it's especially important on easy days too. Yeah. And I don't know, for me, like whether it's the fact, I mean, oftentimes when athletes run faster, cadence is just naturally higher.
Definitely, yeah.
But it might also be too, because I'm like firing up the Blink 182. I'm pumped. Yeah, I got that C4 straight in my veins. But I think really focus it on it on the easy days.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so my little thing, we just talked about you and your increase in cadence. I just wanted to say, in winter, I want to firmly establish, plant my flag in the ground as a pants boy.
Okay, well, you're like a pants boy year round. I'm a little confused by this. So on our run date yesterday, we showed up and we looked like we were dressing for two polar opposite climates. I look like I was going for a run in Hawaii.
Yeah.
You look like you're going for a run at a ski resort.
In polar climates.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You were wearing pants and two shirts. You know, I had a sports bra and shorts on. And yeah, I'd be curious like where the majority of our listener population aligned with.
I'm not curious about where other people align because this is one place where I know I'm right and I don't care what the majority thinks. The tyranny of the majority can fall by the wayside. In fact, I posted this on Strava that it's the time of year, you know, coming up on winter across the country where the shorts guys just come on out. It's usually guys, not always, but even when it's like 10 degrees Fahrenheit out, they'll be in shorts. And so I called them out very gently on my Strava. I got like 30 comments back saying like, essentially, do not oppress my people, including this one comment. Shorts guy checking in, below 15 degrees, the long socks come out. And this is Fahrenheit. Below zero, okay, fine, pants, but I'm not happy about it. What is happening? How is physiology that different that I need to wear pants at these temperatures and people can be out in shorts when it's 0 degrees?
Okay, I think you're a little bit weird because you like need to wear pants in 60 degrees. I understand it. Like I'm not a shorts girl because come 30, 35 degrees and like the pants are coming on.
Also, injury rates do
Yes, when, and I've had like hamstring issues before in the past. I'm like never going to take a risk on my hamstrings by like making my legs cold. But I do it as an opportunity.
What?
I feel like shorts, like the synergy of shorts and ankle weights have to be so good.
In what way?
Oh, you can like see them more. You have to pop around more. Like I feel like they're more, you're emboldened in, with ankle weights.
No, Megan, you're totally missing the point. You're clearly an ankle weights amateur. You're just such a noob when it comes to the weight game.
I've actually never walked around in ankle weights.
Yeah. So the point being.
Maybe I should try it before I knock it.
If you wear shorts and jog around, I only literally jog around for a minute. It's just like a little thing.
No, you jog. Okay. It takes you forever. Like you did a loop of Eben G. Fine Park here in Boulder. It probably took you like six minutes.
Well, I jog 3 miles an hour. Yes. So that's true. But if you're wearing pants, you don't chafe. If you're wearing shorts, the ankle weights can rub and you chafe a little bit on your ankles. So I'm thinking ahead here, Megan. You're a little bit behind the game. It's okay. Not all of us can be as great at the game as I am. But this is just a general point to say, like, don't let yourself get freezing cold in winter in your legs.
It's not worth it.
For no reason. Like, there are pretty good studies that back up injury rates increase in winter. Some of that is being cold and what that does to your connective tissue. So we're joking about being a pants boy, but this is a time to not like elevate underdressing at the starts of runs, which I think just takes risk. Layer up. You can take off layers and hopefully no one comes and steals them, which happens like a disturbing amount.
Actually, this is a good public service announcement to the athletes that we coach. If your legs are cold, don't do a stride.
Yeah.
Like I feel like it's never worth taking that injury risk on cold legs. And it's the time of year to really start thinking about that. And if you struggle with it, like do strides a little bit earlier in your run and make sure they're on warm legs.
Yeah. And you know what? All these people out there that are like, oh, David, I want to get pants, but where do I start? Now is the perfect time because Jonji, our partner, is doing a Black Friday sale of 25% off through the end of the week.
Literally the entire site. I just went on the site.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so cool. Like everything is on sale.
Okay. So their pants are awesome. I'm wearing some right now. How sexy do they look? I think you actually did say, like you started rubbing, grinding against me a little bit before the podcast.
I mean, was it the pants or the matcha?
It's true.
Or the synergy of both. Okay, but the pants, you look amazing and the pants look awesome on you.
Yeah.
But okay, so we had a business meeting with Jonji last week. And after the business meeting, it was here in Boulder in person. It was so fun to get to meet them. They came over and they gave us like the Rover Merino hoodie as a goodbye gift. And my heart melted. Like, you know, like when you, for me as a kid, I'd run like any 5K for a free shirt.
Yeah.
I feel like I would do anything for Jonji after they gave me this amazingly warm and awesome hoodie.
So that hoodie is an option. Also the Mercury Run joggers.
That's what you're wearing. Yeah.
Yeah. So try code SWAP, SWAP at checkout. I'm not sure if it still works with 25%, but if it does, that would be an epic sale.
Can you imagine that?
It would.
25% on 25%.
So Jonji's an awesome company, makes the best gear, lasts for 15 years. So just essentially look at whatever the prices are and say, well, if this lasts me for 5 or 10 years, how much does it cost per run?
Also, I'm partial to anything yellow, and they have yellow. There's like this beautiful yellow color across many different products. Oh, it's great.
Wildflowers.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to get to the really interesting study of the day that we want to talk about. This is a fueling follow-up a study that is just about to come out in December. It's one of those studies that is kind of pre-published. This is in Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, titled "Carbohydrate Ingestion During Prolonged Cycling Improves Next Day Time Trial Performance and Alters Amino Acid Concentrations."
And I really love the rationale of the study, because I feel like we've been talking about this principle of what we call food doping.
Yeah.
The fact that having and consuming a lot of carbohydrates during exercise like improves long-term performance. But it's so fun to look at it on this granular level of what's the next day performance and what are some of the mechanisms associated with that. And this study does exactly this.
Yeah. What's wild to me about all these studies is essentially we started to really research this like 5 years ago. And a lot of the studies that were based on the original studies. So what happens in science is people start to see some causation here. And then they, you know, green light new studies. But those take often. I mean, how long do some of your studies take to come out?
Forever. I mean, you can do a research study and by the time you like do the data analysis and like go through the peer review process, it can take 2 years to come out.
Yeah. So essentially we're seeing this delayed fuse and all of these studies start to come out. That's why we keep bringing them to you, because we're like, oh, well, this is just the scientific method unfolding. And almost never are you seeing studies that stand in opposition to these types of things. So the rationale, and this is a quote from the study, is exercise with low carbohydrate availability increases protein degradation, which may reduce subsequent performance considerably. And so the way they tested that hypothesis is they took 7 male cyclists, had them do 2.5 hours at 68% of VO2 max. So moderate, but not that pretty easy. And then followed by 1 minute on, 1 minute off at 90% of VO2 max. So that was on the first day. Then the second day, they did a time trial. The way they separated the conditions is in the first trial, they did a placebo drink. And then in the second trial, they did a carb drink. And that carb drink was just at 1 gram of carbohydrates per kilogram per hour, which is on the lower end, I would say, of total carbohydrate intake.
Yeah, that's like nowhere near food doping.
Yeah.
And I also think it was interesting too that they were doing this by body weight, because like theoretically, like carbohydrate oxidation doesn't change by body weight. Like, and it might to like very, very small degrees, but certainly not by like 1 gram of kilogram per hour. So I thought it was curious that they're doing that.
Yeah, super interesting. I like the design because it's not on the extreme ends. This is essentially saying, take a gel every once in a while, not do these big protocols that we've talked about before.
But I think it's helpful. Like they only had 7 participants in the study. Sure. And so I think
male athletes.
And so when you're doing this in such a small population, it's really helpful to make the study more extreme because the chances of finding something interesting are higher.
Yeah.
But I'd be really curious to see this replicated in like a larger population with more athletes. But what they found was that time trial improved by 1 minute the next day over the 40-minute time trial. And there was a mechanism for that they proposed. Was that the tyrosine and phenylalanine plasma concentrations were increased in the placebo group, but not in the carbohydrate group. And they thought that this indicated that there was like protein degradation happening.
Yeah.
And so athletes were not recovering as well in the placebo group, which is kind of exactly what we would expect along this food doping paradigm.
And what's interesting to me is, you know, you said this morning, actually, when we were talking about the study, 2.5 hours, that's a really long time. Of course, their performance would be decreased. But at least for male cyclists, I think that for female cyclists, the change would probably be even more pronounced.
Yeah.
For me, if I did 2.5 hours at low intensity followed by some 1.1s, I'd feel fine.
Oh, you're a tank, honestly. Like it's preferable for you to fuel, but you could go like 4 hours without fueling.
Oh, even more.
Like, yeah.
And I think a lot of male athletes that have trained a long time feel that way.
If I did that, I would be bonking by like hour, like 1.5.
Yeah. But what's so weird about this to me is that those changes for those athletes, they probably didn't feel that much different. Like they didn't notice the difference. They're just like, have more watts, have more power, able to perform better the next day. And so you can imagine some of the takeaways from this. What happens when you stack up these types of performance improvements? 1 minute over a 40 minute time trial is like 2.5%. That's a big performance change. What happens when you stack up those changes over one training session, 10 training sessions, 100? It's like, oh, that's how athletes reach whole new levels. And I think this study is starting to show some of the mechanisms. It's like, oh, well, the protein degradation, essentially the body going into catabolic processes from underfueling, becomes a big problem in stacking up training.
Well, you think about it, it's a problem in terms of injury risk. And I feel like the ultimate thing that like degrades long-term performance progressions is sustaining an injury. And so
that's
it's
true.
Like, you know, it's not just raw performance we're talking about. It's like mitigating the risk associated with injuries that then derail long-term performance. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. So you can think about how this implicates bone density, let's say.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So especially for female athletes out there, you don't fuel your training appropriately. What does the body do? It preferentially will sap some of that bone density out, and then you'll go get a DEXA scan and see a really low number. And those numbers can be changed, as we're going to talk about later, but that points that out. But then even if we're not thinking injury, even if we're not thinking those long-term setbacks, like the muscle loss and increased aging and all of that, like it's going to just totally undercut you. And so every time we talk about this, I just am like, shit, not only is this maybe the most important thing going in exercise physiology right now, it's the thing I need to be thinking about like every day, not to go to these really wild carb amounts, but just to make sure that even on my runs of 90 minutes where I don't need anything, I have a gel out there just because.
Well, honestly, I've been thinking about it from a fun perspective too. Because for me, it's like training is most fun when it feels good. Like our run date was incredible because I felt good. Like we've had a lot of run dates together where like one of us doesn't feel great. And honestly, like it's more of a slog. It's not quite that like woohoo huzzah moment out there. And for me on a Saturday, it's like, okay, I got to get in this high carbohydrate ratio so I can have fun on Sunday. Like I really want to prioritize that fun element of it. And like, we got to have that like run date intimate time, and it's not happening without fueling.
When I say like mile 9 of a 10-mile run, or I was like, remember to you, I was like, what do you have to do, Megan?
Oh yeah, you tell me to fuel like a mile away from home. But also, yeah, I kind of look forward to it. Like these hydrogels taste good.
Yeah. So maybe if you didn't, you would have gone from being the Orgasmatron 3000 to the 1000 model. And the 1000 model isn't very good. Or even worse, the Sad Boyatron.
The Sad Boyatron.
5000, which, you know, I think we see a lot of in sports. And I think endurance sports generally, this approach where we're viewing it as fueling, as strength, as building yourself up.
As fun. Yes.
As fun. Yeah. Makes it so much more sustainable. And a lot of the negative like stereotypes of endurance athletes were formed at a time when people just weren't fueling. And if you do, it can be really healthy and you can bring so much more out of your body. But I think what complicates all of this is the nuance here that can allow other approaches to be successful. And so today, what we wanted to do is also talk just a little bit about those so that people can understand it's not as simple as like throwing as much fuel into the fire all the time, you know, without hesitation.
And I think there are some principles to the nuance too. And I think like the people that push back against this, it's like, I understand where they're coming from the scientific rationale. And I think my answer is it depends. Like, I feel like there's so many different things, and hopefully we've tried to highlight this on the podcast over time, is like, yeah, there's some caveats to this too. So one of the coaches leading kind of the pushback against this is Dan Plews, who's a triathlon coach. And he wrote a blog, and it was kind of talking about this struggle, particularly of 120 grams of carbohydrates per hour.
What we talked about, the carb revolution.
The carb revolution. And I can actually kind of understand. So this like central crux of his argument is the idea that it's for most athletes pretty impossible to oxidize 120 grams of carbohydrates per hour.
And even so there's the studies that show performance benefits.
But to be, some athletes do, but I think a majority of athletes don't. And it's like, well, what happens to the delta? Like what happens to the carbohydrates that are not being oxidized?
Yeah.
Might that have some performance limiting capabilities?
Might it stay in the gut? Like he proposes a few things, that there could be a displacement of fat oxidation. It could increase glycogen loss. I didn't really get that argument quite as much. Unoxidized carbohydrates could accumulate in the gut. And he even said something about the professional cycling peloton where a lot of this is happening. He just essentially pointed out it's a different context.
Well, I think it's a different context because if you're sitting there riding in the peloton, like there's been some heart rate studies that have come out, and like sometimes their heart rates are like 100 and they're sustaining that heart rate for like 4 hours. And so you would expect that their carbohydrate oxidation might be different in a state of like when your heart rate's 100, you're not like, you don't have the mechanical stimulus of running. Yeah. And so sometimes I do think the conversations surrounding like the really, really high end of food doping are different in cycling than they are in a sport like triathlon or running.
Yeah. And just the amounts in general you need. So like pushing to 90 grams, let's say per hour, or even a little bit over that, that's reserved for higher intensity stuff. You probably don't need to be doing that ever almost on just your normal easy runs, let's say. And there's a place to just do an hour, 75 minutes without any fuel in some cases, though I think it's probably a little bit more limited for women who have endocrine system issues, like, or concerns to think about. But I think having a gel with you at all times is essential, basically. Like, that's my new thing, is in my John G pants. They have the best pockets.
There's pockets everywhere.
Yeah. I always have gels. They're always incredibly sticky because I never get all of the gel out, especially these liquid gels. It looks pretty funny when I finish, but it's worth it.
You always look like you have jizz everywhere.
I do.
Just everywhere, all over you.
Jizz in my pants.
Even you jizz in your ankle weights, all over the place. What would you say to an athlete that comes to you and is like, I really want to try 120 grams of carbs per hour, and they're an ultra runner? Like, how do you guess and test this theory? Because certainly not every athlete's going into the lab and figuring out their carbohydrate oxidation, which is different for every athlete. Like, how do you toe that line of an athlete that wants to do like the higher end of food doping and like thinking about some of the side effects and things that come with it?
I just tell them to stick at 90, honestly. Because 120 is just so high for runners that unless you would know if you can do it. And usually those athletes only want to think about that if they're professional athletes that are pushing the very limits of human performance, people like Jim Walmsley, who's been doing this forever, or Tom Evans or whatever. So, you know, I think it's one of the points. The carb revolution for me is more about this shit is bonkers performance material, not this is how much you need to do all the time. And finding that nuance is really important. And then, so people like Dan Plews and Tim Noakes, who has some other issues about him.
Well, actually, I do think it's important as you say that. I think it's important when you look at someone's like response to issues like this to look at how they align on other issues, because it gives you like a general sense of how they interpret science and things like that. And I don't always agree with Tim Noakes.
Tim Noakes has gone off the deep end.
Yes. And he's kind of like the leader in pushing back against this. Whereas Inigo Semolon, who's like an incredible cancer research and lactate metabolism researcher at CU, is the one like driving this like carb revolution field forward.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to think about like how I historically align with those researchers.
Yeah, I think we do risk running up against some tribal affiliates, associations. That's the word.
I'm like, where are you going with this?
What I mean by that is like, you know, especially the lower carb people have really staked their claims over here.
Yeah.
And they hold so tightly to anecdote. And what I would caution anyone is if someone's holding really tightly to anecdote of these athletes have had success with this, how successful would they have been otherwise? And what are we seeing in the actual research that's starting to be unleashed? And what we're seeing is, yes, there are nuances. You don't want to be fueled with so many carbs all the time that your fat oxidation goes down a ton, even though I think that's limited when athletes are training pretty high volume. But you do want to be fueling a good bit.
Yeah. And actually, last question for you on this is I feel like when we're talking about things like reaching 120 grams of carbohydrates per hour, a lot of that depends on the carbohydrate source.
Yeah.
And I feel like a reason we've been able to go in this direction recently is because of the invention of hydrogels.
Yeah.
So hydrogels kind of like escape the acidity of the stomach and they allow more absorption of the carbohydrates throughout the intestines. And so it creates this like easier fueling strategy.
Yeah.
Do you think that athletes could fuel 120 grams of carbs per hour without using something like hydrogels?
Probably not. You could probably do it through liquid though.
Yes. I mean, that's true. That's a good point.
I think it's essentially
like liquid suspensions.
Yeah. It's just hard to do through like goopy gels, like the normal gels. And so if you haven't tried hydrogel like things, I think it'd be a great time to. And you know what? We have an opportunity because we have partnered with Precision. And here's a quote from an athlete that wrote in. On a different topic, Precision gels are so much better than other gels. I finished my last two 100-mile races mostly slurping on 360-calorie Precision gel patches. No gut issues at all and ran incredible times. None of the acidity that I have issues that I have with other gels. So, at Precision, you can use offer code SWAP, SWAP, for 15% off. They probably have a Black Friday sale too. Really cool company. And if you subscribe to our Patreon, we actually have a lifetime discount code that you can use forever. So this, I think the SWAP one only lasts once, but on Patreon, we have one that you can use indefinitely.
Well, I really liked how you just read that listener message because there was a particular name of a company that they were comparing Precision to and you left it out. And I was wondering, I was like, oh man, are you going to wade through that, David? Good job. High five.
We try not to shit on like specific companies.
And small companies do. Like we want to uplift everyone. Plus everyone has a different experience. Like
definitely,
we see people like, honestly, like sometimes people struggle with Precision just because like people struggle with everything, you know? And I think like we try to uplift everyone's different experiences.
How do you struggle with Precision though? It's pretty like neutral and
I mean, I would say easy. I see like, it's interesting. I would say I see like 0.05% people struggle with Precision. Like we have a lot of data points at this point, but I would say compare that to like 5 to 10% compared to other fueling companies.
It's so interesting. Yeah. But so you can try that or other opportunities. Science and Sport is good. Morton is good. Or use liquid sources. Just make sure when you're going out on your 10-mile run or whatever, bring a couple gels. You might not always take them. Sometimes you will, sometimes you won't, but it's going to help your recovery. It's going to help your performance. And I think that this is the cutting edge, not just of like professional athlete performance, of aging athlete performance. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a 45-year-old athlete out there worried about regression, fueling is the place to go. Because if it's protein degradation, the same types of processes that happen with age, it's like, holy shit, a humongous opportunity. It's not just in your protein intake outside of exercise or creatine or anything like that. It's in just making sure your body doesn't break down in the first place.
And I think the other thing too, so on Patreon, we talked about fueling with gravy. We had a listener write in a question like, these gels are expensive. You know, is there any alternative? And given that it's Thanksgiving week ahead, I feel like gravy could be a hydrogel that you fuel with. Gravy. You got to dream big.
Yeah. It's a tight, it's hydro something.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to be sitting there like pouring it on our turkey being like, we're getting our hydrogel on.
I mean, I would not mind fueling with gravy because I think gravy also has flour in it, right? So it has carbs, it has fat, it has salt. Perhaps not in huge quantities, but maybe this is the breakthrough we all needed. The happy Thanksgiving breakthrough. So aside, happy Thanksgiving, Megan. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. We love you and we have so much gratitude for you. But gravy time. Holy shit.
We have so much gratitude for people and so much gratitude for gravy.
Yes. Yes. And speaking of our amazing listeners, we wanted to read this email we got. This is essentially an early listener corner, but we wanted to bring it up because it is so beautiful and it brings up a little bit of why we do focus on the feeling talk a little more than others. And I think this will touch you all. So pay attention here. I'm writing this to you on Thursday, November 9th. Significant because my first race back is going down on Saturday, November 11th. I've got three reasons for writing this today. One, to hopefully instill some self-belief. Two, to hopefully express some big gratitude for your incredible life force beefies.
Remember Life Beefy?
Life Beefy. That was something you said.
That was a throwback. Yeah, a few days ago. It was like the Matcha and Bang equivalent of a podcast episode 6 weeks ago.
Yeah. It was even closer than that. Three, to hopefully give some hope to anyone who needs a skosh of it right now. A brief recap of my journey. After 7 years of grinding my body to dust, way under fueling, and operating solely in trauma response monkey brain obsessive mode for too long, I imploded in 2021. I couldn't finish my big race. It was my fifth 100 miler and the only ultra I have ever DNF'd. Cue cataclysmic ego death. What a great writer. In trying to cope with some really horrible things that happened to me, I had inadvertently developed a really gnarly relationship to external validation. That's so interesting. I drove my body to near organ failure. For context, my ferritin level was 6.
Wow.
My anemia was severe and my endocrine system was toast. I was forced to take a break. During that break, I got help. I addressed some deeply painful memories with the help of skilled specialists. Since August of 2021, I've been working hard in a different way to rewire my relationship to running and fueling. It was around this time that I discovered Some Work All Play. I get tears in my eyes at the thought of this because I cannot even begin to tell you how much your Life Beefy has meant for me on my journey of forgiveness, self-love, and health. Your wit, anecdotes, eat enough always swag, and big sexy ass training theory science has kept my monkey brain trauma coping negative behaviors at bay and helped me change so much of my internal monologue around training volume and fueling. Seriously, you guys, fucking life changing.
My gosh, this is fascinating. What a great writer too. Yeah. I also loved how they talked about addicted to external validation.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's such a common theme that I see running through narratives like this. And then working with skilled specialists to help work out of that is such a moment of freedom and gratitude. And I think it's so cool that this listener is expressing this. Also, when we talked about Life Beefy, we were just setting ourselves up for life gravy.
Life gravy.
Yes, which is like eat 1,000 times better than life turkey because fuck life turkey.
Well, turkey's good with a lot of gravy.
Okay, turkey is just a conduit for things. And turkey is a conduit for like gravy and a sandwich and cranberry.
Okay, I've come around.
You've come around?
Turkey's actually fucking great.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it is.
It's dry.
It's only dry if you cook it wrong.
Yeah, but it needs stuff on it.
You know what we're going to do this year, Megan?
What?
We're going to fry a turkey.
Oh, actually, I'm on board with that.
No.
I would fry anything.
We shouldn't.
I would fry your ankle weights and eat those.
One of the main ways houses burn down is from frying turkeys.
Yeah.
And I actually refused to get a fire ladder for some reason. So probably shouldn't fry a turkey anytime soon. But I'm coming around on turkey.
Actually, can I tell you something?
What?
I ordered a fire ladder on Amazon this morning.
What?
I know. We had someone come that helped childproof our house.
Okay.
And they're like, you really should have a fire ladder. And I was on a work trip and you turned it down. And so I just ordered one.
Well, my actual
but it was like $50 cheaper than the one they offered us.
So this guy was really trying to make us scared about everything, which makes sense. You know, if you're coming to childproof a house, you do say things. I had a really good impersonation of it going after the fact where I was like, you know, computers, Mac computers right here kills 97% of kids.
Well, didn't he walk around with a tube and put it on a bunch of things, different things that he could choke on?
Yeah. It's called a choking tube. You need to have a choking tube around. And at the end, I had a good relationship with him. We were joking around a little bit. He's like, what's your plan for the baby in case of a fire? And I was just like, catapult. So maybe it was a good idea to get a fire ladder if I'm talking, because I just wanted to stick by my catapult joke.
Well, you can catapult with your ankle weights and Leo and I will be climbing down the fire ladder.
Okay. I actually wanted to finish this email, which is so beautiful because this is a message to everyone from this listener. And last, to anyone listening who feels as though they are suffering in silence with compulsion, exercise addiction, or disordered eating, freedom is possible. And holy heck, I'm here to tell you that. Though it is tremendously challenging, it is so worth seeking help. Life is truly so much more full on the other side. I believe in you. I love you. And you can break free too. And then even better, an update. I did the thing, that race that they were talking about at the beginning. I was slamming that sweet nectar of scratch, super high carb sports drink with all the smiles and carbs and calories for all the miles. It was joyous. It was fun. It was not forced. And it was freedom. Wouldn't have made it here without you guys. Thank you so much. And big ass love and dump truck energy always. Hashtag, and I like this one, thick hogs only.
Wow. I really like that hashtag.
I don't think that comes from us, does it?
I don't think it comes from us. Maybe we said it at one point in time.
I don't think we did.
I think actually I'm just imagining things.
Thick, it sounds like our vibes, but whatever. We're going to adopt thick hogs only.
Actually,
what
about like thick fried turkeys only?
Yeah. So this listener is so cool. And just remember, when you're dealing with something out there, you are so loved. You're never too far into the hole to stop digging. That's the first step. Call on friends first, then call on experts, because we got this. And a lot of this starts with some sweet, sweet gels.
Well, I thought you were going to say freedom, because yes. I put freedom in all caps. And I feel like that's just like the underlying like theme that I see in people that go through this journey. And
yeah.
I think it, based off of what we heard, it seems so liberating and exciting, kind of like a run date that you haven't had in a while. And you're out there and you're just like, fuck, this feels good.
Yeah. And just even short of disordered eating and some of the trauma that this person went through, I think we're all kind of held back by something, right? Like a lot of the reasons I didn't fuel runs maybe as much as I should have is partially because of things I've talked about before, you know, my own body image issues or just being concerned about gaining weight or whatever. And all of that essentially is the reason we talk about this, is to point out the science is actually everything on this side now of fueling your training. And there are some, dissidents that are arguing the other direction. Mm-hmm. And I think that, honestly, I think that they're wrong.
Well, I think they're arguing the other direction in a way of like, they're arguing between, I think everyone agrees that if you can do 90 grams of carbs per hour, that's amazing.
During racing.
And they're arguing like, okay, maybe 120 isn't as optimal, but 90 grams of carbs per hour is still a lot.
And Dan Pulis is interesting. You go into some of the stuff. And lesser intakes.
It concerns me. But I understand like the scientific rationale behind that.
But I think that stuff can be triggering.
Yes.
Because, you can find scientific arguments to make about a bunch of different things. And I think we need to be careful to understand when, some of these studies are being kind of like apprehended for use in a preconceived narrative. And this is one place where we were always about like big fueling, like with burgers and stuff. But mid-exercise fueling has been a place that we have just been like punched in the face with the data. And your research in this area, has led some of the way in things like bone density and what actually impacts it.
Well, I think the point is even the people that are pushing back against us, it's like unequivocal that we need to fuel really high carbohydrates levels. It's just like, okay, what is the furthest right end of that that's not going to cause GI distress? And I think that's what's being like debated.
Okay. And in the middle end? Fueling, like if you're out there and you're listening, let's say you're a 65-year-old runner that does your 6-mile long run. Bring a gel.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Keep it that can be as that simple.
Bring two. Always have an emergency on you. Yes.
Always have an emergency gel.
And always have a fire ladder on you.
That's actually something I've learned, is to always have 100 milligram caffeine precision gel. Yeah. Because
those things are magical.
I don't know when I need it, but when I do, it's like a, in case of emergency, break glass. So using at Precision, use code SWAP, get some of those 100 milligram gels. You'll thank me. All right. On to news and fun things. So Megan, our podcast has been absolutely taking off exponentially right now.
It's kind of scary.
Do you know why?
No, I don't know why. What have you been doing? Have you been doing something like behind the scenes?
Maybe again, that AI programming in here.
Maybe it's just because you're sending everyone a crop top.
Maybe.
We had that week where you sent out 30 free crop tops without me knowing. It's like, look at all those packages going out the door.
People like my package. Yeah. You know what we're saying? No, so percentages, we're going up like 5% per week in listeners.
Dude, that's wild.
What the fuck is that? So whoever's out there, tell your friends, because we're riding a wave right now. We want to keep riding this wave. But my theory is that we've really leaned into this news and fun things approach, where all week we just list fun things we want to talk about, and then we go through them at the end of the episode. And I think people like that.
Shortly, I feel like it's just going to be news and fun things and then hot takes.
Yes.
Yes. And then a listener corner. Listener corners are great.
We just talk about what we want to talk about, no matter what the subject is. Okay. First fun thing. The Western States Lottery is starting to come out with their numbers, and it is having exponential growth. It's already over 7,000 entrants, surpassing last year, with a week left, and it was half of that number in 2016. So very cool as a reflection on the growth of ultra running, the growth of Western States. Maybe that's what we attribute our podcast growth to.
Oh, it's incredible. It's so cool to see this. Maybe slightly less incredible if you're that person that's applying with one ticket.
Yes.
Or even if you're like 3 years in, and I think you only still have like a 3% chance of getting in at that point. So it's really wild to see the progression of our sport.
There's a really interesting psychological thing going on with some people that, I have one ticket this year from Canyons and I have less than a percent chance. There is no chance I'm ever going to get selected. Right?
Okay. You might.
But there are people out there.
There is a conceivable chance you might.
There are people out there that have contacted us on Patreon that will say, hey, I need to figure out my next season, you know, because I have a ticket for Western States and I know I'm going to get selected. I'm like, what type of psychology leads someone to be like, I have a 1% chance. And like, that's for me. I'm definitely going
to
get this.
Well, you have a less than 1% chance. I hate to break that to you.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's like, I don't know, we really believe in like,
that's true.
We really pursue believing big and hard. But I feel like when you have a less than 1% chance, you got to be a little smart with it.
Yeah. I think belief stops where the lottery starts.
Yeah.
And this is a lottery.
There's an element of like statistics and belief in there. But I would say too that I have some athletes that like really are kind of like thinking about like getting a Western States lottery ticket.
Yeah.
And okay, like maybe they want to like race their injury or race in a time that's like, it's not worth it.
Yeah. No, definitely not. Especially because the chances are pretty low.
Yeah.
And I like the old, you know, you're never going to get into Western States thing, because it's great to have the goal as like a background thing to structure your journey. Not so great to rely on these really low statistics. So as they start to do the lottery, I think it's like December 2nd this year or something like that. Just wherever you're at, even if you have the maximum number of tickets, just go in with a Zen attitude, maybe, you know, take some THC if that's your thing, and just relax and expect not to get in, I think.
Well, also, I think it's always curious to hear the stories of runners who have done Western States too. And we have had some runners who have done Western States multiple times that are like, I never, ever want to do that race again. It is giving me stress dreams in the middle of the night. So
it's
also like,
it's the best race in the world.
It's the best race in the world.
And also the worst.
You're also entering a lottery for a straight ticket to the Pain Cave.
Yeah.
But congratulations.
Interesting reflection on ultra running, in that we are seeing this exponential growth.
It's so cool.
It's so exciting and so cool for the future. Number two, NCAA cross country championships were this weekend. Some interesting storylines from that.
Yeah. How are the men racing a 10K and the women racing a 6K still in our modern society? Like 10K is not that far.
I heard Lauren Fleshman argue that, you know, so the kind of thing is women should run 10K is like what a lot of people have said.
Well, I think everyone should just run 8K. Let's meet in the middle. Yeah.
What Lauren Fleshman argues is to do 6K for everybody. But yeah, I like 8K. I think that 6K is a little on the short end for me, for those athletes. I don't know. And I think 10K is a little on the long end. So let's cut it right down the middle. Cut this baby in half.
I agree. And do it for both genders. That would be great.
Yeah.
But I also think for the 10K too, like I think it's harder for men that are doing like the 800 and 1500 as like specialists to jump into cross country compared to women. And it's like, I think 8K is perfect.
I think 8K is perfect. So the first story, Parker Valby won.
What a boss.
What a wild training story too. So
she's been on a tear. So she headed into like NCAA cross country undefeated with a whole series of course records at major races that have been run consistently at the collegiate level. And I mean, I think all money on her was to win.
But maybe one of the best seasons ever.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is she says that she only runs 2 or 3 times per week.
Do you think that's true?
I do.
I do too. I think she's a truthful person, but it blows my mind.
Can you imagine how talented she is?
Granted, that being said, she says it accounts for 30 miles a week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you think about it, she's functionally doing like 70 miles per week. If you think about it, stretched out or like interpolated into a seven day week.
So but proportionally.
Still, proportionally. Runs, yeah. But I mean, still that's bonkers. Yeah. She must be so talented.
She must be so talented. I do wonder about the alternate world scenario where she does more running miles. What were her results be? I don't think you could argue they'd be better. And that's why I think Parker Valby's story actually does push training theory in some interesting directions.
But do you think they would be different? So, I mean, a 6K, as we talked about, is relatively short.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be different if she was stepping up to like a half marathon or marathon?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But at the same time, like, who knows?
Yeah.
And my point being that no one would expect that this is possible, that she does this year round. In fact, I was reading some quotes from her and a new coach came in and it sounded like they had a lot of friction at first. And my guess is the friction came from, he's like, you kind of have to run. And she's like, no, I like my ARC trainer. And that's what sets her apart. She does so much training on the ARC trainer, which as I understand, it's kind of like an elliptical, as you know, we're big fans of that. And I even read that 2 days before the NCAA championships, she had to find an ARC trainer in Charlottesville, Virginia, because she had to stay on her routine.
Also, I imagine like there's so much deviation in ARC trainers. I imagine it has to be so weird to travel and be like, what kind of ARC trainer am I going to get? Am I going to get a shitty ass ARC trainer?
She said it was janky as shit.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the secret.
Yeah. Well, it has to be scary like 2 days before the cross championships being like, is this going to make me sore because the motion is like in a different way? But she should have an NIL deal with the ARC trainer, man. She would sell a lot of those things.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated to see where her future goes from here. I think that she's pushing the limits of training theory and cross training theory at the very edge.
She's an outlier. Yes. Yeah.
Well, yes, she is an outlier for sure, but maybe there is something to this in the sense that she does 2 or 3 runs a week. It seems as if she concentrates a lot of her running intensity on those days.
Yeah. They're all hard. Yeah.
And then she does ARC trainer workouts too. So she's doing a very high intensity program, it sounds like. And not much running.
It kind of seems like she's doing like Norwegian training, just spread across different modalities. Would you
Yeah, I feel like she's doing Norwegian training on C4 pre-workout supplement. I think it's the bulge and moderate training for her is just massive. And I think the easy training is way lower than you'll traditionally see in training theory based on what she says in her interviews, but who knows exactly. So I'll be very curious to see where it goes from here.
I was just going to ask you about that. Like, do you think she's going to progress? Like, say she runs post-collegiately. She's the post-collegiate world is very different than the collegiate world. Granted, she set a course record at NCAA cross country. So she is running historic times off of this training philosophy. Like, do you think it's going to hold into her like 20s and 30s?
I do at this point for her.
Yeah.
And I guess my bigger question is this going to apply to other athletes? Are we going to see this becoming more of a thing? And I think the jury's out there because
clearly, I don't think it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how many have tried it though?
That's a good point. But how many have Parker Valby's talent? I mean, she's clearly an outlier.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I guess my point is we always want to question our preconceived notions, right? And we're the ultimate easy training, like volume types of people in speed development. So how can we learn from this? And I don't know. I'm still asking myself that question because I think she is resetting what's possible. And if anyone who resets what's possible, doing something totally different could be a new approach because this approach hasn't been tested before. So I think there's a lot of lessons here. Main one being elliptical is a pretty good device, isn't it?
The elliptical is amazing. Yeah. Actually, I feel like it's actually the cross training tool that has the highest translation to running.
Definitely.
I mean, it's so similar to the running motion. And I think even like having the upper body stimulus in there pays off. I guess one question I have is Parker Valby seems incredible in terms of like her like eating risk and things like that. But I feel like if an athlete came to me and they're like, I am so set that this is my philosophy, I'd be like, okay, well, let's just try food doping. Let's try eating a lot more and seeing if we can actually spread some rounds out over those days and see if your body can recover and handle like 4 to 5 days a week of running.
Yeah, but why does she need to? It's working.
I mean, it's working for her, but would it work for other athletes?
No, it's true. I think essentially if it's not working, like the first thing you need to do is eat a fuck ton of food and see what happens next.
And increase mileage. Yeah.
So I don't know. So one more story from the women's side. This is Caitlin Tui. I loved her story. So she got sick the week before.
I think the day before.
And she had a tough race for her. She was in the chase pack, but then dropped back to 11th. And she fought so hard to come back for fifth. And in the process, NC State won by 1 point, 123 to 124. They score in cross country really strangely.
And she was the top scorer. So imagine how much weight she added by making, I mean, they wouldn't have been able to win without her. And they wouldn't have been able to like win without her gutsy fight to come back.
So tough. I'm just
so, so tough. Incredible. Also, I think it's cool too, because like Caitlin Tui, she's had a beautiful progression. Like she set so many records in high school. She's coming in at this collegiate level and she's been smart with her progression. But I also think that if you told her that she got fifth, her final year in NCAA cross country, she'd be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
And she did this for the team and like laid herself on the line while sick for the team. And hot damn, that's an incredible person.
Yeah. And she went to the med tent after too.
She did. Yeah. So, she looked, also she always finishes looking like pretty good and she was wrecked.
Yeah. I'm always like nervous when athletes go to the med tent because I feel like part of me just being, don't race if you're sick. But even if it's not worth a national championship, but maybe it was.
There was this beautiful of her embracing Coach Haynes, who's the NC State coach. And when they found out they won by 1 point, like the most beautiful, like uplifting thing. And it's a reminder, like running can be a team sport too.
I love that. Really cool. Okay. So just one story from the men's side, Graham Blanks won. From Harvard. And I just loved what he said, that I raced like a dumbass. That was the first thing he said in his post-race interview. And for some reason, that just made me really happy.
And that was because he kept covering moves that like, you know, typically I feel like in some of these NCAA cross-country situations, it's better to like sit back and wait or like make a strong move and go. And he kind of, I would say he raced like Tadej Pogačar out there, the bike racer.
Yeah.
And Tadej Pogačar, I would say he races like a dumbass sometimes, but he's got Duende and I respect it.
So maybe the lesson is sometimes you just got to race like a dumbass.
Yeah. Sometimes you fuck around and find out. Yeah. And sometimes you win. In the process.
So amazing. Okay, next little story here is a podcast we wanted to shout out, actually, that I have listened to and you haven't. So this is a surprise to you. Is it okay if I talk about it?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I struggle to listen to running podcasts.
Yeah, well, this is not really a normal running podcast in any way.
Okay, maybe I'll listen to it.
It's called Between Two Pines. It's by Dom Grossman and Andy Pearson. And it's a running comedy podcast. And it's just straight comedy. Like, it just leans into it hard. And I was thinking, like, we have a lot of crutches when it comes to this because we, you know, don't have to be funny. We can be funny if we want.
Actually, the best thing that you told me one time, I was like lamenting our podcast. I was like, oh, I don't think I performed really well. And you're like, just show up and be who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have there's no requirement for us to be funny. Sometimes we are, and sometimes we try and aren't. And we're in like various states. It's great.
And sometimes we launch a baby catapult out the window. Yeah. Not sure how people felt about that joke, but that was real life shit.
And sometimes we'll get emails about it too, particularly related to you. Like, true. How many of the, like, I mean, there's certainly things that I've said people are like, fuck that.
That's actually a good question. How much of our critical hate mail, or hate, not some of it's hate, some of it's just critical. How much of it is for things I've said versus things you've said?
But you know what? I really respect it. Sometimes you got to step up to plate and swing hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to like race like a dumbass sometimes. Sometimes you got to podcast like a dumbass.
That's true.
Just don't get us. You do a really good job though. Like, I feel like sometimes you like push the boundaries,
yeah,
but you never push the boundaries in a way that would get us canceled, which is important to me. I love this stuff is important to me.
I send emails when you're not looking. So.
Oh man.
Okay. So Between Two Pines, it's so interesting. Like they do like fake advertisements, which is something I actually wanted us to do at one point and you vetoed it.
I did veto it. Yeah.
You want us to have more credibility.
But you know what? It landed us in a good business direction. Our real advertisements have paid off.
That's true. It took 3 years to actually sign one, but after that, yeah, smooth sailing. But I just wanted to flag it because one of the interesting things to me is at the start of their most recent episode, the first thing they did was read some of their one-star reviews, which is just a bunch of people that didn't get it. Like it wasn't for them. And it's always interesting to me with humor how someone will not get it and then immediately be like, this sucks, rather than saying like, I just don't get it. And maybe I should just sit this one out and that's okay.
Oh, sometimes humanity is baffling to me. And I feel so much better about myself when I go and read the reviews on national parks.
Yeah.
So sometimes the National Park Service, they have like an amazing Instagram and Twitter account, will post their one-star reviews. And it'll be people that have visited Yosemite and people are just like, meh. Yeah. It's like, what's wrong with people? And so it always makes me feel better reading those and being like, sometimes people just don't get it.
Yeah. One of the first things that I thought really set the tone for the podcast is one of their first ads, fake ads, was essentially like, HGH, human growth hormone. Haven't you ever just wanted to try it? The other one that I really liked was Enduro Pigeon Jerky made right here in Boulder, Colorado. It's like perfect. I feel like running needs, in endurance sports generally, needs more humor where people can try things and fail. Because I think one of the hard parts about being funny in this type of world is we're not comedians, right?
Yeah.
Like comedians spend 10 years honing their craft before you ever see them in a public space where you're not seeking out comedy. And we need to let people try to be funny, fail, and succeed. I think they succeed a lot. And I'm really big fan of this podcast.
Well, the really comforting part about doing a podcast is you say something and it passes. Like we probably say 10,000 words on here. And so like if we fuck up a joke in 15, it doesn't matter quite as much. Where it's like a comedy special, it's like everything has to be so polished and dialed. And it's really nice to have like the low-key environment.
And I think the reason that they're reading the negative reviews is relevant is because they're being judged as if they're a comedy special.
That's true.
Whereas
that's,
I don't think we are.
Yes. Know? Yeah.
And so I felt for them.
It's kind of nice to float across multiple different buckets. Yeah, exactly. You can never be pinned down in one. That's how I did my PhD. I was like, I'm going to have four different advisors. I'm going to cover four different fields and no one's going to be like an expert across all the different things.
I love it. Okay. So give them a hit follow on that podcast if you're at all interested in this. That way we give them a bump. Let's see them. Let's send them to the top of the rankings. And while you're there, if you haven't followed our podcast, please click follow and give us 5 stars. It helps other people find it.
Yeah.
Our review numbers have looked great. We really appreciate you telling us you love us. And if you have 1 stars, leave that to yourself. We don't need it.
You can leave it to Yosemite National Park. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, this was interesting. This is on UTMB Whistler follow-up. I think some people have gotten a little sick of this, but maybe that's why the podcast is expanding in reach, is because people do like it. I don't know exactly. But this is from a listener from Europe. Before listening to this episode, when we talked about the controversy, I wanted to quickly share my shock by the fact how the UTMB Whistler controversy is non-existent in French-speaking trail running media. France is arguably one of the two most important trail running nations, a huge community, dozens of podcasts, many dedicated magazines and websites, and the web search returns nothing on the topic. Nada, zilch, rien.
What's rien from?
I don't know, but it sounds great.
Which language is that?
Is it French? I assume it's French.
Maybe.
Rien? No, they're saying other things. I don't know.
Yeah.
Rien. I would guess Belgium. Oh. Belgian. Belgian? Is Belgian a language? I don't even know. Who knows?
Belgish.
They make good pancakes. The 4 to 5 podcasts I'm listening to have also completely ignored it. It's certainly not out of love for UTMB. Many, many people over here are not fans, to say the least, and many have been critical already. But rather probably shows how France is absolutely unaware of North American trail running beyond Western States, Hard Rock, Barkley, and probably some of the Golden Trail Series races. But it's still amazing how such a small world things can shake one continent and then not exist on the other, unless I miss something.
Yeah, this is actually what we predicted. So as we were having this conversation, we're like, this seems to be a big North American topic, but it's going to take like inertia from the whole trail community to actually make an impact on UTMB.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's weird. Trail running is definitely segmented, you know?
Yeah.
Our podcast being a good example. You know, we're really big in the US and Canada, much smaller in England and non-existent in France.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I wonder, I mean, I feel like to some extent, because of the way the races are designed and like people focus on local races and races close to them, it's almost like there's this like geographic echo chamber to some extent because like people have the opportunity of races in their backyard.
Yeah. So it's interesting because this big power player is based in France. So, you know, are we seeing slightly different pressures and things? It's kind of like someone that is developing a drug outside of the auspices of the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, you know, so like they're facing different types of pressure. So they're not even concerned with that particularly. And, you know, this drug company, UTMB, doesn't need to sell into the US market really if they don't want to.
Oh, they can just develop C4 and have people take it straight and be vomiting mid game and be like, we're good.
Yeah. Okay, next up. This is the most interesting tech story of the year, and it happened this year. It's on Sam Altman and OpenAI. And the main reason we want to talk about this, even though we're a running podcast, is last week we made a passing comment about how, you know, no CEO deserves that much money, talking about these astronomical like $135 million payouts that you sometimes see, other than Sam Altman at OpenAI.
Because and he's what he's done for the work of like the AI community, he's been amazing in terms of maybe not like all parts of him, but I think he has this like genius element of developing the product.
We think.
Yes.
There's complications behind the scenes, I'm sure we're not aware of. But he gets fired literally 3 days after that podcast comes out. And I'm kind of worried that there's a curse right now, Megan, for the SWAT podcast.
And that's because on another podcast, we talked about Dianne Feinstein the day she died. Yeah. I mean, it was before she died. We're not cruel
because
like
we killed her.
I know. I was so worried about it.
I'm so worried that there's a SWAT, curse right now. Between Two Pines guys, Andy and Dom, wear a bubble wrap or something.
Well, I was going to say turkeys, but we know that turkeys are on a path of destruction, unfortunately, this week.
Yeah. Unfortunately. So very interesting story, just for a very quick background for listeners. OpenAI has truly like brought the potential of AI through these generative large language models to the masses through ChatGPT. They're changing the world, but they have this wild corporate structure where they were established as a nonprofit, but there's a subsidiary that is a for-profit entity. But the board that governs corporate decisions is governed by the nonprofit charter, which says that they just want to develop safe artificial general intelligence for all of humanity. So the board doesn't necessarily care about shareholder value, as you would usually see in a capitalist system. So they just came together in a little coup that we don't necessarily know the exact cause of, though people are speculating that has something to do with misaligned incentives as it relates to safety of the product and development of it, to oust him when he's flying high as kind of the Steve Jobs for the new generation.
And this is all happening within the last 72 hours. Like it's on this accelerated timeline. And I would love to see an HBO series that's like Succession covering this. It would be wild.
Yeah. And in just the last few hours, as we're recording this, 505 of the 700 employees said, we will only work here if the board all gets fired. So major tech news. If you're not following it, follow it now. But perhaps my favorite part of this entire story is Kara Swisher, who is a famous tech reporter. I absolutely love her deeply. She does the Pivot podcast, which is one of my favorites on business, also does the On podcast. And I just admire her so much because she has so much swag. And so she essentially came out of retirement as a reporter. Like she usually doesn't report things anymore. And that night was just dropping bombs left and right every single day.
And then she's fierce.
So fierce. And then my favorite tweet of all is at the end of it, at the end of it, when she was the go-to for all information, she just says, yeah, I've still got it.
That's so amazing. Was it just that?
Oh, she said a bunch of different fun things.
Well, I was going to say, because on X now, you can write like a whole, write like a blog post on X, which I kind of hate. I'm like, bring back the character limitations.
I actually like it in times like this because people can really show their whole ass. In 140 characters, you can get misconstrued, but you can't show your whole ass. You can just show a little peek of it. Now you can just bring down your whole pants.
See, I like the surprise element.
Okay. I like the current approach. So follow this. We'll let you know what happens next week. Very interesting. Next up is an article in Elle about Strava as a dating app.
In Elle?
I think it's like a women's magazine.
Yeah, right? I know. It's like, it's not a place that usually sees Strava being talked about.
Which I think is relevant.
I know. Do you think Strava initiated this or do you think Elle initiated this?
Oh, interesting.
Strava's like, we're going to get into these like glamour magazines.
Huh. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Strava, you know, works with PR teams.
Yeah. Like sometimes we work with Strava PR. They're amazing. We actually, we love what Strava's doing.
Love what Strava's doing, but interesting. Wouldn't it wow, I didn't think about the behind the scenes that maybe the PR firm that Strava works with is contacting like Vogue and just like Strava, the new fashion design of the year, just like cold calling all these people.
Like, we have ankle weights over here.
So here's a quote from the article. However, many users are divided over the fact that the app currently has no private or direct messaging function. While some believe that Strava should stick to its original intentions of recording activities, others yearn for the capability to reach out directly so they can further a dialogue or explore a missed connection on a route.
That sounds very L-like. That sounds like Glamour magazine.
I think that's all we need to read in that. You get the idea. It's just very interesting. And I think it points out that Strava actually does have a lot of opportunities to grow their business in ways that other companies don't.
Because well, I feel like the strategic mission of how they've gotten here, though, is relevant. Like, I feel like they've taken smart strategy to grow in a way that hasn't been exponential, that has allowed them to position themselves with this number of users in a smart and methodical way.
Yeah. So do you think they should become a dating app?
No. I like my Strava. I mean, maybe it's because I got you.
Yeah.
Maybe if I was single, I would think differently. I'd be like, DM me, buds. Come on, guys.
The Orgasmatron 3000 demands patrons.
Can you imagine how motivated I would be to get crowns?
Oh my, when you see a dude on the trail?
Yeah, I'd be like, so I get really inspired to like crush bitches sometimes.
You do. Sometimes when
when there's someone ahead, I am like that person. I'm bad. I feel like I'm a good person until I get to like segments and I become a bad person. I'm very competitive. But do you know what? It would be so motivating.
You would be wearing so much of the sexiest John G clothes. Like, it would be wild, Megan. You would be getting all of the skimpy options from John G. All that pants talk I had in winter, it'd be 5 degrees and you'd be like, nope, whole ass coming out.
Bring in my whole ass. Well, I was on a work trip this week and I had to be incognito for like the purposes. I couldn't release my location for the purposes of the work project. And I was so sad because I couldn't display my Strava. It was a deep, deep, deep sadness. I got a crown and I had to turn it off.
And could you imagine how much more sad you would be if like Mr. Wright was on that trail?
I know. If he was right there. I was in a location where I don't think Mr. Wright existed. But you know what? I would have loved it if he did.
Not Mr. Wright, but Mr. Right Now is going to kill you. That person. Okay. Next up is a really interesting study that just came out on sodium bicarbonate. The reason we're not talking about this sooner is that I think we're both a little bit unsure on it still, much like we felt about ketones for a while, that we need to get more data, understand it more, see athletes use it more.
And I think we're still unsure on ketones, actually. And we're still unsure on sodium bicarbonate.
A little bit more unsure on ketones just because so many athletes have used it. But what's fascinating about bicarbonate is that you're starting to see athletes say that they're using it, not just be using it covertly. In fact, a Let's Run article came out the other week that listed tons of Olympians using this stuff, up to two-thirds of Olympic medalists, which is wild and kind of scary.
And I think it centers around the idea. So Martin came out with a really great way to deliver sodium bicarbonate. So sodium bicarbonate is a really basic substance. You can literally take it as baking soda. But if you did that, your GI system will implode. Like you'll have diarrhea, like your stomach just can't process it. But Martin figured out a way to suspend it, kind of in a very similar hydrogel-like solution that doesn't cause GI distress for a lot of people. But I love the description of how you have to take this product. And I think it causes, like, I think when you think about, there are people that respond to this in a very different way. Like the article had a lot of mixed opinions. Like there were some athletes that were like, this made me feel horrible and weird and on another planet. And other athletes that were like, this is the next coming.
Yeah. We got sent some. I tried it once. I felt really weird.
You didn't tell me you tried it.
Yeah. And so here's the complicated thing. I tried it when I sent my 20-minute power PR on the bike last year.
Did you really?
Yeah.
But why did you stop using it?
It made me feel weird.
Interesting. In a way that like you were not comfortable with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watts are worth almost anything, but watts were not worth feeling that strange.
Weird is, that could encapsulate a lot of different things. What do you mean by weird?
I'm trying to think of a way to describe this without getting into libel law.
Libel law?
Well, I was worried about my heart, actually.
Oh, okay. So libel law with like in our relationship?
No, with the company. I just like, it made me feel strange in a way with like how my heart was beating. And maybe that's because I was putting out more power.
Yeah.
But that kind of brings up this study title, which is sodium bicarbonate ingestion in a fasted state improves 16.1 kilometer cycling time trial performance. The study just found a 30 to 40 second improvement in 16K TT relative to control.
Which is massive. If you think about it, 16K TT is not a lot of time.
These were elite athletes.
Too. Yeah, in elite athletes. That's huge. And I think it coincides with a lot of what we're seeing in terms of the Peloton in like pro cycling and world records falling. But I would say there's like this huge varied response. And I want to read this quote. This is from the Let's Run article. And they're describing the Martin bicarbonate solution. It's not quite liquid, not quite solid. salad, a yogurt-like substance flooded with tiny tablets that you eat with a spoon but swallow like a drink. The swallow part is important. Chew the tablets and the sodium bicarbonate will be absorbed before the hydrogels can do their job.
Yeah.
And if this happens, it causes a lot of GI distress. But do you know what my theory is? What? Why there's this like huge range in athletes? I feel like it's because some people are just not good at swallowing. Like if you,
so you need swallow practice.
Yeah, you need to practice swallowing very diligently if you're going to use sodium bicarbonate.
You should do that as your Strava description if I die, because you're going to get, that's going to be a dating app real quick.
Can you imagine the swallow pressure? Like if you're stepping up to the world championships and you use sodium bicarbonate and you accidentally take a little taste and don't swallow.
It's actually quite easy.
You're fucked.
It's quite easy.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like you can mess it up.
So it's really fascinating, actually. So it has these mechanisms related to buffering hydrogen ions that are associated with fatigue. Yeah. So like higher lactate levels. The question is how it applies in endurance. Are there other downstream impacts we're not thinking of? Do these changes start to be blunted at different levels? We don't know the answers to those questions yet. Does it work in non-fasted states? Do the capsules work? Because they also have enteric capsules.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know exactly. We would love any feedback from listeners. Like if you've used this for ultras, your marathons, whatever, feel free to send it in, ideally on Patreon, and we'll, you know, get some information. But for now, I think we're taking like a kind of skeptical view of this.
Yeah. And there's also a topical solution too, which you've tried. So there's a bicarbonate lotion and
called like AMP or something. AMP. Like that.
There's like a few different varieties of it. And it smells like it's doing something.
Yeah.
Because it's very potent. Do you think it actually does anything?
Probably not.
Yeah.
And a study actually came out that found no effects from it, from the transdermal lotion, but it probably varies. I'm sure the company says that it improves it. It smells bad enough that I think it improves my performance. It's like, if you're rubbing skunk juice on, that better help. So I think it does help a little for that, but maybe that's all.
Apparently the starting line of the Pro Peloton smells a lot like skunk juice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot of shit.
What a good way to get motivated for performance.
Okay. Next up, marine worm hemoglobin.
And this is the study that we were talking about in the roadmap that so many podcast listeners have sent us. Actually, it's not a study. It's an article about the use of marine worm hemoglobin as a potential form of doping.
So I don't know that much about this. All I understand really are that these worms have like higher oxygen carrying capacity. What do you know about
this? These worms are the cool. As soon as I read this, I was like, I want to know about the worms. And I feel like last year I went down a Tadej Pogačar Instagram like deep dive.
Yeah.
I was going back. I was looking at like his ex-girlfriends, like scrolling through everything. I did the same thing with the worms. I was so fascinated. I was like, tell me more about these creatures.
You're a worm girl now?
I'm a worm girl.
Okay. So, you know, it says like W4W, like woman for woman. You're W for worm.
Woman for worm. I should really do worm research. Okay. But these worms are so cool because they can actually transport 50 times more oxygen, so their hemoglobin structure, than human hemoglobin, which is like bonkers when you think about it. And then unlike human hemoglobin, their hemoglobin is not contained within like red blood cells. It's contained in an extracellular environment. So it floats freely and it can like directly and like more accessibly allow for oxygen transport, which is very cool when you
and
think about it.
Very scary. So this is in the context of doping.
Yeah.
So this is illegal and like would be, hopefully it can't be used in the ways that the Cycling News article is saying.
Well, it actually could have great medicinal properties for other, like for other disease states and things like that.
Much in the way that EPO would be.
Yes, you know, exactly.
EPO was developed by Amgen.
Yeah. EPO is an amazing drug for people who need it. And it's a horrible drug for how it's ruined sport. And like the slugworm has the same capabilities.
Yeah. And it also points out, man, evolution is wild.
Right?
Because all of this time, you know, evolution has gone for billions of years, all from when the Earth accreted, you know, then life formed, then the Cambrian explosion, the extinctions of all these species, all designed so this lugworm could be created so you could gain 20 watts on Alpe d'Huez in the Pro Peloton.
You know what? It makes sense because all of evolution converges on Tadej Pogačar.
Okay. So don't use this marine worm, but also very interesting and a fascinating little wrinkle about performance.
Can I read one quote? So Hemarina is the company that has like manufactured this lugworm into usable parts for science and for other different things. And I love the diversity of what you can use this worm for. So Hemarina have created a number of specific products with lugworm hemoglobin, including the Hemoxy Carrier, universal oxygen carrier, a solution to help preserve organs used for transplants, oxygenated dressings, cell growth activation, and even fermentation for cheese, wine, and bread yeast. So all of evolution is converging on bread yeast and Tadej Pogačar. What more could be better?
I liked oxygenated dressings.
Yes.
I was thinking of like Thousand Island.
I was too.
Caesar.
Yeah.
That's what I'm about. Oxygenated Caesar. Hot damn. I am in.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine how much that would power performance?
It would be so good. All right. And final little thing we want to talk about is some interesting emails we got about Athletic Greens. So I wanted to read this one because it's pretty wild. I've been back on the AG1 train for the last week. I feel I'm a better person to my partner. I'm wondering if you have heard anything similar to from others. It is like it has affected my mood and I am able to see more positive things and I feel more affectionate.
Oh my gosh, this is wild.
And here's another one. As I approached day 60 of my daily Athletic Greens regimen, I noticed numerous positive changes. My sex drive increased. My muscular fatigue decreased. My average per mile pace on runs decreased without any training change. My maximal attainable heart rate increased. I'm a believer.
What do you think is the most important in those statements listed? You know, like, you know, when you're like writing an email and you're like, I'm going to bury the most important one in the third, like when you're doing a list of like three of five, number three is the most important. Of those, what's the most important to you?
I regret to inform you that it's average pace per mile increase.
Not sex drive.
Not sex drive. Not being kind to your partner either. Honestly, Megan, relationships come and go. Watts are forever.
But you know what? I feel like there's a high correlation between watts and the strength of a relationship.
It's true.
I feel like our relationship is really cooking when we're both feeling good.
It's true. Okay, so we get emails like this all the time. There's another one I'm not even going to read that talked about how it changed an athlete's numbers around lactate threshold and lab testing. We are true believers. Drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. If you use that link, you get a bunch of bonuses, vitamin D, which is one of the most important supplements, and bonus travel packs. Use it. It works. And I've actually been loving it before exercise recently. I do it first thing right in the morning when I wake up with our special frother. Ever since I've started using the frother, my life's been changed. So Athletic Greens sent us one that's made to mix their material. So use it with the frother and your life will change too.
Okay. You've been using the frother for everything. I'm like, we need to reserve this for Athletic Greens. Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't like seen you like mixing pasta sauce with the frother.
Yeah. It'd be perfect for that.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah. So drinkag1.com/swap. Okay. Do you want to do hot takes or do the bone density
Let's
question?
Do hot takes.
Yeah.
Because we have some good ones and I want to spend some time on them.
Oh, perfect. Well, what I'll do then is refer you to our Patreon where we did a huge breakdown last week on our bonus episode, which was, I think, our 76th of these bonus episodes on bone density improvements. So this is so relevant for all athletes, but especially aging athletes and female athletes. We talked about different interventions so that no matter where you're at right now, even if you've been told by a doctor you have osteoporosis, you can improve that number by leaps and bounds. So check out patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P.
Yeah, I think the main narrative theme was that like if you have a DEXA scan or a bone mineral density scan that shows osteoporosis or osteopenia, your career is not over.
No,
like, not
it's
at time all. To invest. It's time to invest in fueling. And there's tons of different things. And some of the top athletes in the world that we have coached fall into those categories and have done so and have like progressed and improved their performance in ways that have been safe. And so like, yeah, keep believing.
We've seen -3 to -4 scores on the, you know, DEXA scans coincide with great performances long-term.
Which, to put that into context, corresponds to like the less than the first percentile in terms of overall bone mineral density. Even lower than that, yes.
Yeah, and it just points out that there are huge opportunities there. So check that out on Patreon. Also, you get messages there anytime, bonus podcasts, bonus posts, tons of fun things. On to hot takes. First one, hot take. As I'm standing in line for the porta potty before an ultra that starts in 8 minutes, you shouldn't be allowed to use the race's porta potty if it's in within 30 minutes of the race, unless you are running the race. Not running? Go poop somewhere else.
This is amazing. Actually, more relevant, go side pee somewhere else.
Yeah.
Here's my hot take. If you can side pee, it's not worth standing in the porta potty line.
Yeah, I don't think the porta potty line should be used for pees. Yeah. Just in general. I mean, that's a controversial take. Maybe people, I know people don't like when you poop in nature. Maybe they don't like when you pee in nature either. I don't know.
I feel like peeing in nature just brings out good flowers.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the places that I pee sometimes in like consistent spots, sometimes when flowers sprout up from there, I'm like, oh, that's good.
I mean, Megan, you're just different. You're built different. Your excretions include magic. It's like Dune, the movie Dune. Spice is in the sand, right? So they all often like illuminate it. It's just like grains of spice. You piss spice.
I got grains of gravy.
Okay. Next one. Going Strava dark is akin, so signing off Strava is akin to Tom Sawyer faking his own death. People be like, you injured? Do you like running anymore? Are you dead? It's so fun to do every once in a while and then emerge back after a couple months of training and devour a segment.
I actually really like this. This is like the crushing bitches, but in a meditative way on Strava. Yeah. So like go off it for a while and then come back with a 20-mile long run and just take everyone's segment. Or go dark and then upload your watch and get the segments from all the past weeks and months.
I like that.
Yeah.
I also just think it's healthy to not upload every single thing to Strava.
Yeah, you don't.
Or yeah, I always.
Actually, your mileage is a lot higher than people think.
Oh, you're just trying to make people that like,
I'm trying to make people scared for your race ahead.
And then, I mean, the reason I don't is just because like, Why?
Yeah. I think it's healthy. Like, take a decompression from your phone. I have an athlete right now that's doing like a full phone decompression and is so happy.
Yeah.
And is seeing like resting heart rate and HRV changes. And I mean, I think consider doing that every once in a while.
Same. But you need to find a place that you can download our podcast.
That's a good point.
So yes, yeah. Make sure you have our podcast. Like, we promise, we're just going to uplift you and all our sweet, sweet worms out there. Okay. Number three, we need a new term for when you're not quite in the pain cave, but you're not feeling great. I propose the discomfort vestibule.
Ooh, that's a great one.
Yeah. I like it. I think pain cave is often uplifted as like, I overcame that thing. But I've spent a lot of time in the pain cave where I'm just like, oh, this just sucks and I'm going to fail. So I kind of agree. At that point, it's not a pain cave. It's something worse.
Oh, yeah. You're like sitting in there and it's getting hot. It's like the inferno.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Inferno, the disco inferno.
But no disco's happening. Inferno is perfect.
No, I'm a weird sort. Like, when I'm in the inferno, the disco's happening.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like when we're doing our run and I'm like, you know, pushing the tempo, and that's when the woohoos come out.
Perfect. Okay. Number four, homemade chicken soup with lots of salt and noodles is the bomb pre-workout breakfast meal. I've eaten this twice before a long run and once before giving birth and felt great. I missed the birth part before. This does, however, come from someone who doesn't love breakfast.
Okay. The test of giving birth is the ultimate performance test.
Yeah.
Also, I downed so much broth in labor. They didn't let me eat for like 60 hours. Wow. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And actually then they're like, oh, you're going to throw up if you eat. And then I got to the point where I was like, I don't care. I'm so bonked.
Yeah. You need to be food doped for that.
I was like, I'm not going to have a baby if I'm bonked.
Did you end up eating?
I did. And then I had Leo like 6 hours later.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah.
That's all your body needed. You needed the gels.
I know. I was like, I'm not going to poop out a baby unless I'm fueled.
Maybe in the future we can bring precision in.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about soup?
When I think about soup generally?
For breakfast.
I think savory breakfast options are really interesting, especially when you think about hyperhydration from sodium intake. This seems like a really interesting idea and I might try it out at some point.
Yeah. I guess my only question is sometimes I think in the morning if I do like a big liquidy thing like soup and matcha and tea and hydration, it's just too much liquid going on in my stomach and I feel kind of full.
Perhaps. But soup sounds really good.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Soup is great.
Okay. Number five. I like this one. This will be our last one.
Okay.
Should we do this as listener corner too, since we're kind of running up against the end? And it is a listener.
Let's do this in a listener corner.
Okay. Here it is. Relationships shouldn't be hard. Granted, that just showed. It's pretty hard. Sometimes you disagree about how long you should go. I often hear people say things like, love is constant work, or you have to fight to make it work, or even it's going to be a lot of struggle. I feel like this indicates communication issues that need to be worked out. If that's not possible, then it's probably better to break up. Maybe I'm super lucky, but I've lived with my girlfriend for 3.5 years and we've never had a fight. We've talked about difficult things, but we've never raised our voices at each other or said things that hurt or blame each other. Of course, you have to show up and do your best in every situation, but I don't think a loving relationship should be difficult.
This is fascinating.
It's a hot
this
hot
is,
take.
This is a hot, hot take. I agree with the love that like love is constant work. I don't think that's always true, but I do think that sometimes you have to like disagree and work through things. Like, I feel like our relationship has really taken off now that we started doing that.
Yeah. These people, I respect them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because I believe this.
Yes.
But the thing with me is like the difference between my relationship with you and my relationship with Drew is I've never fought with Drew.
Yeah.
But I've also never banged Drew.
I was going to say, well, here's the thing is I feel like it's worth it. If you fight and bang, it's the ultimate communication.
No, yeah.
And that's hard work too.
Sometimes.
Yes, yeah.
Depends.
Yes, the it's flow state.
The way we do it. Not sure what type of work that is. You're like, I need to clock in.
We need food doping.
But I think that this point is wrong.
I agree. Actually, yeah. I think for
99.9%.
I think it's actually important to have healthy fights and disagreements in relationships and then to bang after.
And, yeah. No,
we don't have to do that. But like,
yeah, but the point just being like, I think that every relationship with basically all people, when you're fully entangled and you, you're laughing at me already, emotionally entangled, fuck, wrapped up together as two writhing emotional, fuck. No, but when you're in these relationships, like conflict is almost inevitable, I would feel like, and probably a good thing for most people in the sense that the only way to grow together is to have conflict and then come together, fuck, with similar intentions, right? Because if you don't have the conflicts, you don't have a reason to rejoin with, united intentions. And so like, I think about our fights and, they're relatively common relative to any other relationship in my entire life.
Like, oh yeah, which is like zero for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and never fought with anybody.
Yeah.
But the point being that every time we do that, if we're able to do it successfully, and it might take days, is that we're able to come to an agreement of our goals as a partnership based on that fight. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, I worry that you grow apart.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because eventually these unstated things become bigger things. And so if you're able to have great communication without that conflict, awesome. But I almost feel like plate tectonics, that like, you know, there's constant things rubbing up against. And yes, you can just kind of have a system where you don't have earthquakes, but it's almost always these slip faults where there'll be like a slip and then it's an earthquake and then it resets. But you know, maybe relationships can exist without it.
Okay. That was beautiful. High five.
Thank you.
Also, I think a summary statement is fight and then entangle yourselves and grow together.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Before we get to listener corner, do you have anything else to say on all of the amazing topics you talked about?
Do I have anything else to say after an hour and 30 minutes of the podcast? No, just, I love you. I love your ankle weights and I love our listeners.
I love you so much.
Also, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Yeah. This is a really fun week. Also, it's a hard week for some people too. And we uplift that.
Yeah. It is definitely a hard week for some people. Yeah, family stuff can be really difficult.
Yeah.
So as always, Thanksgiving message, love yourself as much as you can. Also, try to cut your family infinite slack. More so than almost any relationship, I think it's important to remember that they're coming with a wild amount of shit built up in their brains, and you're probably not going to resolve it in one day. So as much as I love conflicts in a lot of settings, your uncle can probably be crazy for a day.
Yeah, it's true. I only love conflict in our setting.
True. And we are not pursuing that any further. Okay, listener corner. Laughter has always been more than just a value to me. It has been a way of life. When I was a junior in high school, I received three of the exact same birthday cards from different people who were unfamiliar with each other. The card read, "Happy birthday to the only person who can make carrots fly out of my nose." Wow, lots of carrot influence in there. Apparently making reference to how I made others laugh. Cheesy, but sweet nonetheless. I never sought out to be funny per se, and never thought I was. I just always moved toward laughter. I blame my father, a man who danced like Steve Martin from The Jerk, spit out wit like Jason Bateman, and made carrots fly out of my own nose. When he passed away last December, the most swollen parts of my grief were in the ache to hear his laughter. Thankfully, my goofy husband and carefree kids picked up the baton. But something else did as well, the SWAT podcast. I wholeheartedly believe that laughter is medicine. Codeine for a broken heart, cookie dough for a hard day, caffeine for stagnation. When we feel sad or stuck, we need laughter. When we feel uncertain or unsure, we need laughter. When we feel confused or conflicted, we need laughter. In full transparency, I don't come to SWAT for the sexy science. I'm sexy and I know it. And even though I'm a psychologist, science puts me to bed faster than zinc and magnesium. I don't come to SWAT for the hot takes either, even though I'm thoroughly enjoying the spicy hatch chili sauce that ripples through the airwaves. And I don't even come to SWAT for your training tips, though undoubtedly, if I tuned into them, I'd be crushing more bitches and slaying sons. I come to SWAT because of the laughter. It is medicine. Codeine, cookie dough, and caffeine smooshed into every episode, every subject, every interview. We need more of that in this world. We need to laugh more at our own heartache, our own stumbles, and even our own successes. We all need to take ourselves just a little less seriously, open our big ass mouths to laugh more and criticize less. Thank you both for being catalysts of cackles and contagions for joy. This listener deeply appreciates it.
Okay, well, you crushed that reading.
What high five.
Also, that's beautiful. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I've learned a lot about grief from this. And I don't know. I feel like grief is really, really hard.
Yeah. And this listener is someone that we admire so much personally and professionally in what they've accomplished in their field. They're an absolute superstar. Maybe even like we can promote some of their actual stuff on the podcast next week because they've changed our lives in that context. And it's cool to get this type of feedback that this person who is just an absolute freaking boss understands that the cackles come from a place of just kind of like not knowing shit sometimes and having to be okay with that.
Yeah. And who's an expert on like grief and love and laughter and carrots probably. Yeah.
And love and loss and conflict and all of these different things. And maybe that's the big message of the podcast, is that it all is this amalgamation of lots of different emotions. It's okay to feel every single one of them. And also the reverse holds true. And I think that that's an important point that we sometimes brush past. So a few weeks ago, we got a conversation about the bimbo comment from a listener where they said they were a bimbo. And we talked about that comment and the way we want to uplift like this joyous approach to life, even when it's not how you feel, to lift others up around you. Someone actually wrote in to push back against that in a very kind and loving way. And I totally agree with them, you know, that like that isn't just not always possible. For some brains, it might never be possible. And you're just as loved in that context as you are when, you know, you're laughing at the dumb entanglement jokes we're making.
Well, we love everyone so much. And I feel like we're learning from all the listeners out there. It's wild. And also simultaneously, I feel like we're having a lot of food doping by different objects coming out of our nose. This weekend, you made a joke that was so funny. And it was the first time liquid has come out of my nose. Yeah. I was drinking hot tea. Yeah.
And a joke that was too inappropriate for the podcast.
Yeah, definitely too inappropriate for the podcast. It was great though.
Okay. So now we're ending the podcast.
Yes. Are you going to say the joke?
I'm not.
Okay. I was like waiting for it.
But there's a way I wanted to end the podcast very, very, very much. So will you let me do it?
Sure.
Okay. So last week, Snoop Dogg announced that he was going to stop smoking. So smoking pot, which is really famous for.
Also, I think it's great because we need more teens and adolescents and adults to stop smoking pot. Yeah.
Yeah. You probably shouldn't smoke anything. Like smoking your lungs isn't great. But it reminded me of the song, The Next Episode by Dr. Dre. And that features Nate Dogg, I believe. I don't know if Snoop Dogg's on that song, but you know, kind of similar vibes there. And it brought up something that I've always wanted to do, but I've never had a reason to.
What is it?
It's how that song ends. And are you ready?
Yes.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey, 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 hey. Don't smoke weed every day.
I knew you were going there. That's amazing.
We love you all. Woohoo. Huzzah.